It's time. Time for stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation. Time for the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. Turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events. Here is Lisa Wexler.
In order to honor his memory and in order to be part of the solution, that I would have to spend the rest of my life spreading this message of nurturing, healing, love, and being part of the solution to the issues that continue to escalate. We've had 350 school shootings in the past 9 years since Sandy Hook. We've had 28 this year alone. And every single one is 100% preventable. I realized that after Sandy Hook. And then I took a look at the approaches that we had in place since then. They are the same approaches that we use today. And I realized, obviously, it's not enough to be reactive. It's not enough to harden the schools, to do active shooter drills, to put in see something, say something programs. All of that is good, but clearly it's not enough.
That's Scarlett Lewis, one of the parents of one of the children that were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut in 2014. So that is 7 years ago. 203-333-9422. So we are going to spend some time with this subject, as uncomfortable and as awful as it is, because this is our community. This is where it happened. And we owe this to ourselves. And we can also look at ourselves with some degree of understanding, if not pride, that we had a bipartisan response to gun violence in the aftermath of Sandy Hook. A lot of the gun reforms were actually led by Republicans who represented Newtown. Ironically, Newtown, also the town where one of the most prominent gun advocacy organizations is located and is still there, believe it or not. But we all recognize that what happened with Adam Lanza on that day, what happened first to Nancy Lanza, his mother, and then the over 20 school children and the principal and the teachers. What happened was a tragedy that when we look back at it, 2020 hindsight, Ms. Lewis is entirely correct. It was completely avoidable. There were so many things that if they had taken a different turn would have ended in a different outcome. Beginning with the fact that Adam Lanza himself was a severely disturbed young man whose father and half of his family had pretty much ignored him, and whose mother in a divorce was left to cope and figure out how to deal with him and wasn't able to do so successfully. She allowed him to live in a virtual room of his own. She allowed the windows to be painted over black so that no light would enter. When he would emerge on rare occasions, Adam Lanza was an emaciated young man of 20 years old, dressed in black, who looked like he hadn't eaten a meal in weeks. He had no real friends. He might have had virtual accomplices, but he had no real friends. And his mother tried desperately to figure out a way to connect with her son. So she thought, oh, let's go shoot together. That's something we both enjoy. And so she took a hobby, an activity that millions of Americans benignly enjoy every single day. And she aided and abetted a severely mentally disturbed young man to have access to weapons in her own home. He had not one but five guns that she had purchased. They had a record of the two of them going to shooting ranges together to enjoy their time together. He had no business ever having a gun. Ever having a gun. He had no business spending 23 out of 24 hours a day in virtual first-person shooting games online. This was a severely mentally disturbed young man. He may have been on the autistic spectrum. He may have had learning disabilities. He clearly nurtured tremendous gripes and grievances against all the people in the world who had wronged him. After he died, tiny little handwritten aspects of his journals were found, pages and pages and reams of his own grievances with the world, how the world had done him wrong. here he was in an outwardly beautiful suburban neighborhood. He clearly had a mother who loved him. He had a divorce situation in his home. Well, many, many children are children of divorce, and they don't go up to be mass murderers. He was severely disturbed, and the school system is to blame, and a lot of people are to blame, and his own mother is to blame. Unfortunately, she paid with her life. His immediate family is to blame. But you know who's not to blame? Who's not to blame are the victims of his shooting rampage that day. Those people are not to blame, and yet they were the ones who suffered the consequences of the fact that he had too easy access to a gun. He had a mental condition that was left untreated, and he went and on this crazy, crazy rampage, which all of us will never forget the rest of our lives. All of us who were alive and who lived in this community on December 14th, 2014, will never forget it. Never. We'll never forget where we were. I'll never forget that I was sitting in a car in Rye, of all places, where I never go to Rye, but I was invited to a holiday gift exchanging thing. And a friend of mine said, oh, come on over to this place. And people build, they do handcrafted gift exchanges. And I thought, oh, I'll go. You want me to go? I'll see this thing. I've never been there. And there were whispers that something was some news. And I went in my car and I put the news on, likely WICC. And I couldn't move in the car. I sat there in the car, in the parking lot. And I kept saying, because remember the first announcements were that it was kindergarten class and that it was 20-something kids. And I kept saying, it has to be wrong. They can't mean 20-something. What do you mean? They can't be first graders. And I kept praying in the car that they were wrong. They were wrong. I kept thinking, this can't be. This can't be. And I started to, like, fall apart in the car. And I put myself together. I came back home. I have a dear friend who lives in Sandy Hook. At the time, I was taking care of a young girl who was 13 years old who was living with me because her family had certain problems and she had severe emotional issues. And she went to the Reading Elementary School, which is like a hop, skip, and a jump from Sandy Hook. And so my focus, my area of radiance was in that direction every day because I was picking her up from school and dropping her off. And like a homing pigeon, I ended up driving my car to Sandy Hook that day to visit my friend who ironically lived around the corner from the Lanzes. I never knew that. He probably didn't even know that. And I saw the house that was cordoned off and police cars in front of it. And there was like a pall of mourning over the entire community. And, you know, eventually they took the elementary school down because nobody could bear to go back into that building. Could you blame them? So you say to yourself all these years hence, well, what did we in Connecticut do and what happened with the rest of the world? Newtown wasn't the first incidence of mass shooting. The first that I can recall was Columbine in Colorado, but we didn't seem to learn anything after that. And despite the fact that Michael Moore made his documentary Bowling for Columbine, we didn't seem to learn much at all. And people that felt that their Second Amendment rights were next to God, were next to their First Amendment, felt even more threatened and menaced. And other people gave into all kinds of fears. And so actually the incidence of gun ownership has gone way, way up. Way. Every time we have an incidence of mass violence, people's individual reactions are, oh, you know what? I need a gun to protect myself from the crazies. But every time somebody gets a gun, they increase the incidence of the likelihood that somebody's going to get that gun and have an accident with it, commit a suicide with it, God forbid commit any of that, or even a homicide with it. Because we don't have smart guns in most places. We don't have guns that are only able to be shot by the person who has legitimately gotten a license for the gun. Every gun owner I know, every single one of them says, you know what? That's something that makes sense, Lisa. That's something that we should have. If I buy a gun and I'm the one with the gun permit, I'm totally okay with nobody else ever being able to use my gun. Nobody else can use your phone. Why should somebody else be able to use your gun? Just think about that. Nobody else can use your phone. You need a password to use your phone. Don't you think you should at least need a password to use a gun? It's easy. There are things that we can do that we could have common ground and agree on. but it hasn't happened because there are agendas and interests at work that get money from people by preying on their fears, and they keep their staffing levels and their benefits healthy and wonderful and their coffers full by buying off politicians who agree with them. What's that about? What's that about? Vast majority of Americans want gun reform. They respect the Second Amendment, but they want gun reform. What's a gun reform? Having a password, making a smart gun for every gun. Getting rid of ghost guns. There isn't one person I know that's a responsible gun owner that thinks that people should be able to have a 3D printer and by virtue of the web be able to get guns made in their own room and put the parts together so that nobody knows who made the gun. Nobody, there is no registration of the gun. It's a ghost gun. It appears from nowhere. There is nobody I know that's a responsible gun owner who thinks that's an okay thing to do. There are things that we can be doing. There are things we should be doing. I'm going to give you some of the stats at 203-333-9422. And feel free to call in and you tell me. You tell me right now, 203-333-9422. I want to hear from you on this anniversary of Newtown. How has Newtown, how has it affected you? How's it affected you? Has it affected your politics on gun violence? Has it affected your theories on mental health? Has it affected you simply because you live in this community and it makes you sad? How's it affected you? How did it affect you then? Does it have no effect on you at all? You know, one of the other interesting strains that has come out of Newtown that I have remarked on is how many of the parents have turned to activism as a way to channel their grief and have been very effective in doing things. So, for example, Nicole Hockley has founded, Sandy Hook Violence? Sandy Hook Promise. Sandy Hook Promise, which does immense amount of public research and public communication on gun violence. Her ex-husband, Ian Hockley, is going to be joining us tomorrow. He didn't want to come on today, and I don't push. He's coming on tomorrow to talk about his foundation, which goes into schools and has junior high school kids and high school kids teach social skills of conflict resolution and therefore violence prevention to each other in our school districts, which has turned out to be an immensely successful method of trying to teach kids how to resolve their own conflicts, how to feel better, how to deal with bullying, which is a common thing that happens when we're all growing up, and how to then emerge as a better, more whole human being. That's how Ian Hockley has channeled his grief. We have Catherine Violet Hubbard, the Catherine Violet Hubbard Sanctuary, right in Newtown, where I have been to this beautiful, pristine open space that has been designated as open space in honor of one of the children that died. So it's just fascinating to me how many of the parents have channeled their grief. All right, let's hear from you. We're going to go to Sharon from Stratford. Hello, Sharon. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good this morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I was just calling in just to speak about the school safety. As far as I'm concerned, they did absolutely nothing. My grandkids go to school. I don't want to mention which one, but they tell the parents that they don't want the kids to be afraid of police or anything in the school. And my grandson went to the head of school and told him about a boy that was talking about guns and shooting people and all about that stuff. And they allowed the child to enter the school anyway, and he still goes there. And last week there was another incident with a knife. A boy brought a knife to school and was telling the kids in the lunchroom that he was going to poke them and stab them. And he's not in school right now, but I'm sure he'll be back. And I'm very concerned about my two grandsons in the school systems. These are in private schools, and they do not care, and they do not do anything. They should have metal detectors in all the schools, and that's how I feel. I think it's terrible and disgusting that parents send their kids to school and they're not safe at all.
Sharon, a couple of things. First of all, what age are we talking about?
One boy is in, he's 12, and he's in seventh grade, and the other boy is a freshman, 14. And this kid that talked about the guns, this happened a few years ago, and he came home and told his parents, and his parents told him what to do, and he did it, and the head of school let the child in the school anyway. And did nothing about it.
And these are private schools? I'm shocked that these are private schools, because public schools, I know, have to obey the law and have due process rights for kids. Private schools don't have any such thing. They could just expel the family right away.
Yeah, well, they did tell the family about this latest incident with the knife, but I'm sure the child will be back in school after school break. So, I mean, it does go on everywhere. It's really frightening. It's frightening to me that my kids aren't safe in school, my grandkids, you know. And I don't want to mention the school, but it's not in Stratford, but
yeah.
I'm sure it goes on everywhere, because my daughter did look into other private schools at the time they entered this school, and that's the same thing they told her. We don't believe in having guards or anything around the school.
Well, I understand that, Sharon. I actually understand that from a school point of view. I don't think that every child needs to be punished by living in a fear environment because of the fact that a couple of kids are disturbed. Because I think that the warning signs of the disturbance are there. So it's not about, to me, it's not about the metal detectors, to me. Especially in small schools, maybe in large schools where you have a couple of thousand kids, but where you have a couple of hundred, and you know your school, and you know your families, and you know the kids that are disturbed, then you have an obligation to step in and intervene to prevent the violence. Because all of these incidents, Sharon, are preventable. There were always warning signs. None of these kids came from nowhere. That kid, Nicholas Cruz, in Parkland, his mother begged for help. Do you remember? She called social services 6 times in the last month before he did what he did. She begged for help, and she got no help. So I think metal detectors are not, personally, they're not, in my view, they're not really the answer. The answer is that when you've got a kid threatening, that's a cry for help. That's what that is.
Exactly. I know.
Thanks, Sharon.
It's really scary. Yeah. I mean, it just seems to
be
getting worse, you know?
Yeah, it does. I haven't even gotten to the stats yet. It is getting worse. It's actually empirically getting worse.
It's really scary. Very scary.
Thank you, Sharon. Yeah. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Linda from Bridgeport. Take it easy, Sharon. Thanks for the call. Go ahead, Linda. What's on your mind?
I completely agree with Sharon and the thread that you were just bringing up. These kids are disturbed. When I was going to school, if you skipped a class, you might get suspended and sent home. I mean, and these kids, they post on social media, they're disturbed, they want to kill people, and the school systems keep them in class. It's just absolutely ridiculous. We have to vote in people that will restore the law in our country to protect the citizens and the kids in the school. These children, including Adam Lanza, should have been put in a mental institution. I mean, we think that's cruel now, but we have to protect people. Now, I just want to mention one other thing. You did give a great wrap-up of everything that happened with Adam Lanza. The last thing I remember in the paper was, his mother went on some kind of a little mini trip with some guy to New Hampshire or something. And I think that was the final straw. I think he thought his mother might commit him. And that's why she was the first victim. She got killed right in her bed before he went on a rage.
Right in her bed.
There are crazy people that should be in mental institutions so we can be protected. That's what I want to say. And if our politicians aren't able to do it, vote in somebody else.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Daniel from Reading. Hey, Daniel, welcome.
Hi, good morning. Yes, and
good morning.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for having this conversation and realizing that it is the people that are the problem. Now, there's definitely some issues that I have with increased isolation for these people. I know it's easy to say, you know, send them to a mental institution. However, I think increased isolation might make things worse. Now, how do you stop a bad guy with a gun, a good guy with a gun? And I think schools need to seriously think about having well-qualified, maybe one, maybe two teachers that are willing and up to the task, conceal carry during the school day. And they keep it on their persons. There's no chance of a kid ever coming into contact with it. But in the event that a bad person has a gun, a good person has a gun and is able to stop that. Subjecting all of our kids to authoritarian metal detectors and searches just to walk into school will only breed more contempt and hate. I think remember, Adam Lanza was identified to the FBI well before he shot anybody. Same with the Parkland school shooting. I mean, I think the biggest failure here is with government agencies. So giving these government agencies more power when they've proven that they cannot handle the responsibility that comes with this power is ridiculous. I think we need to look at it more in a holistic approach, in the sense that, okay, when I went to high school, we always kind of, now this is, you know, years and years ago, but as students, we always had an idea of which kids might, you know, oh, don't be mean to that kid. You know, that might be one of those kids who, you know, come and shoot up the place. Now, this was only Columbine had happened at this point. But as students, you know which kids are, you know, presenting isolated traits and things like that. And I think when we identify it, and instead of excluding these people, including these people, and make them not want to, I mean, to want to kill people, I mean, that's sick. I mean, who wants to do that? The only reason, in my opinion, why anyone would want to do that is if they are filled with so much hate that their only response is to cause more hate. What if we included these people in more of a friendly environment and bridged the gap a little bit?
So Dan, there's a lot that you've said today to really sort of unpack. There's a lot to what you've said. I'm going to sort of go backwards. So with respect to isolation, you're 100% right on. I would say that any trained psychologist will tell you that these are kids that are already feeling terribly isolated. That's the point. They feel like the world is against them, and they want to get back at the world because they don't have any friends and nobody likes them, and they live in their own narcissistic place. So the answer isn't to continue to isolate them. It's to figure out a way for them to learn empathy for others so that it isn't only and always about their feelings. But so that's the psychological piece, and I agree with you. And we don't have institutions that we throw people into anymore. We used to, and I'm glad that we don't have them anymore. But on the other hand, we have too diffuse a mental health system. It's too ragged at the edges. There are too many people that we know need help, and they don't get help. We have a long way to go to fix our mental health system. And that's probably what we all need to be focusing on. But, you know, it doesn't make headlines, right, Dan? I mean, it's hard to do, and it's you got to get your elbow into it, and it doesn't make for pat headlines. But
I agree.
I'm not sure about whether or not we should have good people have guns in schools. And I say that, and I'm not sure, because number one, we know, and you could look it up, that some teachers that have tried it have had accidents in the classroom. There was one teacher who shot into the ceiling, and all the debris came down and actually hurt some kids. And he wasn't intending to shoot anybody, but the gun accidentally went off. Thank God it went up and not at.
Guns don't accidentally go off. Guns do not.
Well, it did, though. Well, the teacher claimed it was an accident.
It was an accident on his part. That means he was handling the firearm and the trigger was pulled. That is disgusting negligence on the teacher's part and was not qualified to hold that position.
But here's my point, Dan. But here's my point. We know that human beings are negligent. Every day of the week, we know that human beings make mistakes. That's why I'm not sure your idea is a good one. That's all I'm saying.
I've carried a firearm for as long as I can remember. I've never had a negligent discharge. At the end of the day, it comes down to responsibility. And although I would love to live in a world where guns don't exist, the stark reality is guns do exist. And the only way to stop a bad person with a gun is a good person with a gun. We cannot make all the guns disappear. We can't isolate people that may be a threat, you know, like that movie with pre-crime. Oh, you know, we think they're going to do this, therefore let's lock them up.
Yeah.
And then what happens when they come out? Let's say they're in a mental institution for 5 years. What happens when they get out? They only hate the world even more, right? So I think we need to drastically change the educational system as a whole, but I think we all need to have the conversation, especially with everything going on in the world as far as, you know, riots and things are getting much more violent. Good people are buying guns at a record rate. We have smashed the record on the amount of people buying guns. And on another note, did you know when you fill out the form to purchase a firearm, you have to say whether or not you have voluntarily looked for help for mental health issues? That in and of itself makes people think that, oh, well, I can't – maybe they are having problems. And they want to seek help, but they say, you know, I don't want to give up my right to defend myself if I tell someone I'm feeling depressed.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I think that's a real problem.
You think that's a disincentive? You think the self-reporting makes it a disincentive to seek counseling?
Absolutely. If you seek counseling and then can be denied your ability to protect yourself, it only leads to people not coming forward and saying, hey, you know,
we'll have to talk to some of our politicians about that. That's an interesting point that you bring up, Dan. I got to remember that. Dan, I got to run. I've got a guest coming up. Yes. Thank you very much for calling today and thanks for listening.
Thank you. God bless and take care, everybody.
We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show. David Brand from Aspetuck Land Trust is going to be on for some good news because, you know, we always have to find some good news. And then we'll come back to Sandy Hook and we'll keep talking. We'll keep the conversation alive. Stay tuned.